Chapter 15. Killing Monsters Equals Loot 4.0. Jake felt a bit better after getting a deeper understanding of his own emotional situation and even his bloodline. Perhaps it was indeed just a faux feeling of enlightenment, but it lightened his heart nevertheless. At least enough to move one point down on his list of things to do, one of which was to check his many status messages he had gotten during the fight with Abby and her scumbag dad. Speaking of which, he began with a kill message for him. You have slain Human E, level 51, Aspiring Blade of Debauchery, level 65, Salacious Malefactor, level 38, experience earned. Right, that confirms it. He was a sick fuck through and through, Jake thought, as he read the name of that guy Donald's class and profession. Like, seriously. His class reminded him a lot of the Aspiring Blade of Nature he had fought during the tutorial, except instead of focusing on nature, this guy focused on being a goddamn degenerate. Even the profession was fucked up. Did the dude seriously have a profession related to sexually assaulting people? Was that seriously a thing? He hadn't seen many examples of classes and professions, and it quite honestly shouldn't have come as a surprise to him, but nevertheless, he found himself dumbstruck. He knew the system was boundless and that it allowed one to walk pretty much any path to power. The Viper had mentioned that time and time again. But in some hopeful and naive corner of his mind, he had hoped that people like this guy wouldn't, no, couldn't, exist. Seriously, Salacious Malefactor. It used colored language and fancy terms, but it basically could be read as lustful rapist. The guy had had to make a conscious choice to pick that profession during his profession evolution, too. He had chosen to be that. The only positive thing he could say about the guy was that he was now dead. Moving on, he went to the sick fuck's daughter, Abby. You have slain Human E, level 59, Disciple of Kalox, level 77, Authoritarian Leader, level 41, experience earned. Her class and profession were both a lot more typical. The class was clearly related to that Kalox fellow mentioned. Jake did wonder exactly how strong he was, but the guy didn't appear that impressive from what little he had heard. Then again, Jake's view was pretty skewed. He had already learned that most humans didn't even know about the existence of literal gods, and even more believed them to be some mythical entities that didn't really exist in any tangible sense. Her profession was also relatively tame, a social-type profession that he hadn't seen before and likely was a big part of the reason why she'd kept her merry band of followers around. As to what it actually did, he, of course, had no way of knowing. Next, he went on to something he would actually enjoy. Well, not the first part, but hopefully the one after that. He summoned Abby and Donald's corpses and threw them on the ground in front of him. In retrospect, a pretty bad idea, as it ended up getting even more blood on the floorboards. But what one doesn't do for loot. The act of stripping down the two was a bit much, but Jake really felt like it was a waste not to. However, he did have the decency to leave Abby still in her robe. He could have the other people take that robe later if they wanted it. As for Donald, yeah, fuck that guy. Jake had already noticed that the rings usually merged with their bodies had reappeared on their fingers after their deaths. The same was true for the two necklaces. Taking off everything of value took a while, and most of it was of no use to him, the ones from Abby especially. They were either for casters or had space mana requirements or were bound to someone with relation to the Kalox guy. The descriptions even said he was the creator. I guess I can bribe that Neil guy with them. He did find some things of use, though. A ring from Abby, and two items of interest on Donald. Ring of Brilliance, rare. A ring with a rare gem crafted by a very skilled jeweler. The high quality of the mana in the gem grants the user increased mental stats. Enchantments, plus 50 intelligence, plus 50 wisdom, plus 35 willpower. Requirements, level 45 plus in any humanoid race. The ring had the same name as one he had found pretty early on in the tutorial. Or maybe found was the wrong term, as he had also looted that ring off the corpse of a female caster he had killed. Disregarding that, this one was two rarities higher and offered many more stats while also holding a higher level requirement. Now he already had two rings, and more than that didn't work. System rules and all that. The one he planned on replacing was the worst of them, naturally. Ring of the Jade Eye Tiger, uncommon. a ring created by embedding the crystallized eye of a jade eye tiger into a band. The records of the tiger powers the enchant, granting some of the beast's might to its wearer. Enchantments, plus 20 perception, plus 15 agility, plus 15 strength. Requirements, level 30 plus in any humanoid race. His other ring had the exact same stats, though with a higher amount and different distribution. Ring of the Ruby Eye Tiger, uncommon. A ring created by embedding the crystallized eye of a ruby eye tiger into a band. The records of the tiger powers the enchant, granting some of the beast's might to its wearer. Enchantments, plus 30 strength, plus 20 agility, plus 20 perception. Requirements, level 40 plus in any humanoid race. Of course, deciding which one to replace wasn't a contest. Jake's only regret was that he would lose stats he actually used and needed. Well, used and needed more. Maybe the increased intelligence would actually prove supremely useful with his newfound magical abilities. Intelligence was still his lowest stat by quite a bit, and this ring alone would give him more than a 10% boost, nearly putting him at the cap of how many stat points he could gain in intelligence from equipment, aka a 20% boost maximum. With his gloves already providing 35, it would put him at a substantial 85 bonus out of an 89 maximum. His equipment wasn't something he really thought of often, but he had to admit that it was, without a doubt, one of his many advantages over other survivors, too. His armor and gloves were both from the Nest Watcher and offered solid defenses and stats. His necklace offered the quite frankly overpowered and ridiculously convenient spatial storage, and his mask was increasing his maximum mana by a ridiculous 25%. They were just passive bonuses that, by nature of being passive, didn't really enter his thoughts on a daily basis. Heck, he forgot he had a mask on half the time. Which wasn't to say he didn't appreciate getting better equipment. Taking off his old ring, he put on the new one, losing 20 perception, 15 agility, and 15 strength, but gaining 50 intelligence, 50 wisdom, and 35 willpower in the process. Trading 50 good stat points for 135 okay stat points in the process. The sensation when swapping the stats was barely noticeable and actually made him feel slightly weaker, which made sense as he lost physical stat points but gained mental ones. Overall, he was somewhat confident he had gotten stronger. As for the old ring, he decided just to give it to Hank. The man looked like he needed equipment pretty bad after all. The rest of Abby's loot was useless to him, as he'd already noted earlier, so he moved on to Donald's two things he found noteworthy. The first of which was a pair of bracers. Leather bracers of peerless deflection, rare. Bracers made from tempered leather from a powerful E-grade beast, produced by an even more powerful craftsman. Borrowing from the records of the beast it is made from, these bracers have the ability to deflect ranged attacks when infused with mana. Enchantments, self-repair, plus 25 agility, plus 15 endurance. Requirements, level 40 plus in any humanoid race. These ones were actually pretty damn decent, with excellent stats and a magical ability attached to them. In fact, the man had decent stuff overall. It was too bad that Jake had better. Oh well, more stuff for Hank. Looking at his old bracers, he got a strong sense of nostalgia. They were the first piece of equipment he had found in the tutorial and had been with him from before he even got his profession. They had, if his theory was right, led to him unlocking the Shadow Vault of Umbra skill, a skill that had gone on the back burner recently, but had been instrumental to his survival in the tutorial. Leather bracers of the Novice Rogue, uncommon. A pair of leather bracers made of fine leather, originally designed for new initiates in the Order of Umbra. Enchantments, self-repair, plus 5 agility, plus 3 strength, increases the effectiveness of all stealth skills, further amplified while remaining hidden in the shadows. Requirements, level 5 plus in any class or humanoid race, stealth-based skill. These he didn't plan on handing out, but instead saving for himself. A piece of memorabilia, if you will. Taking them off, he deposited them into his spatial storage and put on the new bracers, once more feeling the small rush of stat points after binding them to him. The deflection ability he would have to test later. For now, he moved on to the last thing the man had dropped, and without a doubt, the most interesting. Scimitar of Debauchery, Epic. A cursed blade made by the wicked for the wicked. Crafted from steel that has soaked in the blood of the innocent, leaving a powerful curse of resentment on the blade. A curse that can be further strengthened by adding more souls of innocence. Wield with caution, for the curse does not only affect those it strikes. Enchantments, curse of debauchery. Requirements, humanoid race. Once more, like the blade of nature, he had strong suspicions that this blade was the source of Donald's class. A fucked up class for a fucked up man. Granted by, if the description was accurate, a fucked up sword. But despite its fucked upness, it was still impressive in its own right. First of all, the requirements to use it. It didn't have a level required, and the only other items Jake had seen with that were soulbound items, which this one evidently wasn't. It only had a single curse placed upon it, a curse powerful enough to bring it to epic rarity based solely on its merits, or demerits. He also had a sneaking suspicion that it hadn't always been epic. It stated that one could add more souls to it, as ominous as that sounded, to strengthen it more, something Donald had done plenty of without a shadow of a doubt. Now, was he going to use it? The answer was a resounding fuck no. Sure, it was likely better than his short sword of icy winds, but his short sword had the advantage of not being literally cursed. The only thing he couldn't help but wonder was if Donald had been fucked up from the start, or if the blade had made him that way. A mystery he quite frankly didn't care about solving. So Jake just threw the blade in the corner of his spatial storage. Maybe he could still find a use for it later, or just forget about it entirely until the end of time. Being done with all immediate tasks, he believed it was time to make his presence known once more. Walking outside the cabin, he saw Miranda skillfully conversing with the many survivors who'd followed Abby and Donald. Hank and Neil stood together with Neil's party at her side. The moment he was seen, the talking quickly died down as everyone turned to him. He felt the social pressure and asked a bit forcefully, "Miranda, what have you learned?"
"Well, according to them," she began, signaling to all those around. "They were more or less all forced into following her, either by circumstance or directly. They tell me that—"
Jake listened as she explained a bit more of the history of how Abby had gathered a crowd to begin with, about how their tutorial had been rather dangerous initially, even more so than Jake's own, at least if you only spoke of the outer area. They'd been forced into combat constantly from day one. In fact, this was the primary reason why Abby had any followers at all. She'd been their leader due entirely to her power. Most of them had despised her, her father even more so, but she had been strong from the very start. She and Donald had hid their wickedness until they were powerful enough to stand unopposed. To call her a good leader would be a straight-up lie. She had abused, killed, and forced them all into doing things they didn't want to. Any they met were given the ultimatum of either joining her or dying. If someone showed too much talent, they had the mysterious tendency to disappear after either she or Donald asked for a private meeting. This just reaffirmed Jake's theory of why she'd kept them around. Perhaps in the beginning, it had been done to have safety in numbers, but later it was clearly just to farm experience for her profession. As for Donald, his reason for keeping the group around was equally pragmatic, but far worse. Jake had already noticed it before, but their group only had 3 women remaining. In other words, of the more than 100 that had been in Abby's group, less than 1/20th were female. 2 of them were old, in their 70s or maybe even 80s. The last woman was young, but she was scarred. Something Jake learned she had done herself. She had taken a knife and cut off her hair, cut her own face and body all over. The scars were not healing, likely due to her own wish for them not to. She was also the sole survivor of the massacre that had taken place earlier, as the 2 elderly women had died from the space mana explosion. As for the rest of the women in their group, he could only imagine their fates. Actually, scratch that, he wasn't going to imagine it. "So, are they staying?" he asked, after hearing her long explanation and summary of what she had learned while Jake had an existential crisis in the lodge. They had already learned of her profession as a city lord, and the fact that the area was free of beasts. She had credited that to him as the owner of the land without providing further specifics about why or how.
"Yes, all of them are," Miranda said, nodding.
She had already added them as official citizens and registered them in her interface. "How about you guys?" Jake asked, turning to Neil and his folk. Contrary to everyone here, those 5 had the ability to leave this place relatively safely. After Levi was healed, of course.
"We have agreed to stay too," Neil said, "to pay you back for what you and Miranda have done for us.
Also, we have wandered enough. To have a place to call home is a valuable thing. It would be foolish for us to reject the offer.
After his party members nodded in agreement, he added,
As long as you allow us, of course.
As I said before, that is entirely up to Miranda. She is the city lord here, not me. But I do have one task for all of you. He smiled a bit deviously. Go clean up my lodge.